You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Has anyone here been involved in a personal injury? If so, you need to see Nelson and Murdoch.
Nelson and Murdoch.
Come on, people. It's Friday. Thank you for everybody coming to the American Media Track. DragonCon 2015. Woo! You got more energy than that. It's not Monday. Come on. Who likes blind superheroes? There we go. Before we go, it started just a little bit of business. At 7:30 tonight, there will be the drive-in heckle along with the lovely Mr. Joe Crow and Mr. Kevin Batchelder. They will be doing the fourth or so year of this, where we will have a movie to heckle at. This year's movie stars David Hasselhoff as a knockoff Jedi. I am not kidding.
Wow.
In a movie called Star Crash. Anyone here seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's not David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
It just looks like him.
No, don't hassle the Hoff.
That's Carolyn Monroe, isn't it?
No, it's Hoff.
I don't think so.
It's Hoff.
Yeah, why don't you go?
I just watched it on Netflix like last month. It's Marjo Gortner. It's Marjo Gortner.
I think you're thinking of a different guy.
All right, I'm sure somebody's got some TV.
So anyway, my name is Gary Mitchell, really, and I am the co-director of the Sci-Fi Classics Track Next Door, along with Mr. Joe Crow, who will be at the drive-in. I am a huge Marvel nut, and I've been a Daredevil fan since way back in the Frank Miller era, and that's why I'm here. And the rest of my lovely panel is...
Hello, my name is Jennifer Hartshorn. I am the producer and host of Earth Station MCU, all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and which is part of the Earth Station One podcast network. And I love Marvel. I was so incredibly happy with how Daredevil came out. I was one of those people that was going, please be good, please be good. And I was, it was awesome.
I'm Bethany Kessler, historian, writer, and all-around comics nerd, and Daredevil is one of the best things I've seen this year, which is why I'm on this panel.
I'm Eric Asher. I am an author and also a Daredevil fan, as you may have suspected.
I'm Van Allen Plexico, and among the various books I've written, 7 of them are superhero novels, and some involve street-level characters like Daredevil. And I also host the White Rocket podcast for the Earth Station One Network. Mm-hmm. And I started reading Daredevil in 1977. That means I'm old. Stop clapping.
You might have been 5.
No, I was born that year.
It was a good year.
So
it was a good year.
All right, so we were all up here. We were all familiar with Daredevil before the series started.
I am Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay.
I am not quite a comics virgin, but I am sure all of you up here and most of you out there probably know the comics better than I do.
We dare not speak.
That didn't take long. That did not take long.
That'll be over in the classic track. All right, so starting with Van and come down, just your general overview of what you thought, how would you rate the show, and what was your, and then we'll go from there.
You know, I think that to start by looking at Daredevil, we got to look at Arrow. Because that's another very well done, very mature seeming, you know, intelligently done street level superhero show. And I love Arrow. I think it's extremely well done. But there were certain things about it that I thought, oh, if they hadn't quite gone there and gotten just the least bit comic booky goofy, oh. And then when Daredevil came out and I watched it, I thought, they got everything right. They did not, well, I'll say this. The only time that I thought it threatened to make me go, you know, is when he got the costume at the end. Because you know why? He had to have the costume. He had to. But by that time, I was so used to it just being a lawyer dude who's blind and goes out and gets in these horrible bloody fights and nearly gets himself killed that I almost didn't want it to change to superhero Daredevil. Yeah. But other than that, I thought, and I think it hit every beat perfectly. That was great. Eric?
Yeah, I got to agree with Van. And I kind of grew up with the 90s comics, and I was used to Kingpin and like the Punisher comics. And I kind of wanted to see that, but I really like where they went with it, where they had like a smaller guy. Well, he's not small. He's still a big, thick guy.
Still, yeah.
And I just, everything was well-rounded. So you've got a great villain, you've got a great cast, you've got a great supporting cast, and it was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I was one of those people really, really fervently hoping that it didn't suck.
Mm-hmm.
since the MCU and I have had issues with that.
Fair enough.
So, but I thought that the representation on the most part, on the part of Daredevil and him being a disabled superhero, mm-hmm. that part they did pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love the fact that they hit several beats, like Van said, that were just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it was so refreshing to see a superhero actually bleed on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And not just like just a little dab here or there. No, he's actually bloody and broken.
He spends like two episodes just recovering.
Yeah. From that. And that was really super refreshing. And it was a nice addition to it that I think we need to see a little more of that we don't get to see of in the movies. And diversity-wise, it's not unproblematic, but it did a lot better than most of the rest of the MCU total.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was sitting here going, yes, where's season two? Season two's now, right?
It's on the way. It's coming.
Come on.
It's coming.
But she needs it now.
Now.
I think we all need it now, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Gonna refrain from that joke. Yeah, so I was incredibly impressed with it. I think that it says a lot that I believe on Rotten Tomatoes it is still at 98% fresh compared to a certain movie that came out this summer, not by Marvel Studios, that I believe is at a 7.
Who knew that the Rotten Tomatoes score would be that close to the name of the movie?
I know, right? How about that? Yeah.
They totally planned that.
Yeah.
They did it on purpose.
Fantastic Four squared.
Oh, yeah. No, that. For me, one of the things that has always impressed me about the way that they have done the MCU is that. It would be very easy at this point, with as many shows as there are, as many movies as there are, to have massive superhero fatigue, right? Because if they were all just superheroes doing superhero stuff, then we'd be getting at least a little bit bored by now. But they have done such a great job of having, you know, like you've got something like Winter Soldier that's totally like a Cold War espionage film. And then you've got, you know, something like Daredevil that is such a different tone. You know, yeah, you've got things like Arrow that are street level, but it's, as you were saying, all the movies that we've gotten, all the TV shows that we've gotten have had a certain, you know, restriction in terms of what you can and cannot show on film. And that can be violence, that can be sex, that can be all kinds of things. In the case of Daredevil, I had people saying, so is it good for my kids? And I'm like, no, it really isn't. And they're like, oh, a lot of sex. I'm like, no, really, it's violence. And trust me, I have a pretty high threshold for violence, and this was... It's like, how many times is he going to slam that car door? Oh, he's still going. So I think that's one of the things that they've done really well, and with Daredevil especially, was by saying, we're gonna take this in a different direction. It's not going to look like any of the others. It's not going to feel like any of the others. And so that's what keeps it very fresh.
Yeah, yeah. For me, it was that. They caught the tone of both the early Daredevil comics, mm-hmm. and they kept it dark, they kept it grim without getting bleak. Although right. Daredevil in the comics can get pretty darn bleak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But all that and just the characterization on everybody. Oh,
yeah. Fantastic performances, fantastic.
So it's, for me, it's one of the most solid things to come out of the MCU. It's just phenomenal. It's just this series for me justifies everything else, even the Incredible Hulk movie. So coming back down the other way, my favorite moment, which is hard to pin down, I think one of my favorite funny moments is when Fisk is talking with
Wesley.
No.
Vanessa,
thank you. My brain forgets things sometimes. And she's talking about she met this one guy, and he's like, this big man in a white suit with an ascot. And Fisk goes, man, ascot, that's a bit outrageous. I'm like, oh man, they just slammed Kingpin in the comics. But, you know, one of my top favorite moments was involving them is when they're having the dinner and she gives him the gun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that just spoke so many volumes about him, about her, about their relationship. And I was like, this is intense. This is cool. What's one of your favorite moments?
Basically an entire episode. You've got, it's sort of a cliche in superhero things that, you know, they've got the secret identity that they're hiding from all of their friends and everything. And they had most of an entire episode about, it was the Nelson versus Murdoch episode.
Nelson versus Murdoch, yes.
And just the level of the feeling of betrayal and just the gut-wrenching emotion that they were going through and the conflict between these two characters. You can have an entire half an hour's worth of just drama between these two people in one room, and it is absolutely riveting. And I thought it was. But yeah, it was just one of the most intense things that I've ever seen on TV, and I loved it.
Oh man, a favorite moment. The entire series.
The
opening to end.
How awesome was it to have a TV show with a theme song again?
Yes.
In the opening.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the one that comes initially to mind would be where he sits down with Melvin Potter. Mm-hmm. And he sits down and he takes the time to listen to Melvin Potter. And I'm like, and this is why Matt Murdock is who he is. Mm-hmm. He's willing to stop. You know, with all this other stuff that's going on, mm-hmm. and y'all have seen it. You know how many balls he had in the air at that point. But that he's willing to stop and just really, even though he needs something from this guy, he's stop and just walk Melvin through the process of calming down and then telling him what's going on and then eventually getting to the point where he can ask him for something. That is still one of the moments that keeps sticking out in my head as a really awesome moment.
I really liked the part where they had the Mos Eisley Cantina song in there. To preface this, I'm really into like villain development right now. Mm-hmm. So I keep coming back to the villains because a great story needs a great villain. And actually the scene where Fisk, the head in the car door.
Yeah.
And the reason it's my favorite scene is because you have all these episodes where he's waffling back and forth. It's like, well, maybe he's not really all that bad. And then it's like, oh, no, he just demolished that guy's head in the car door. He's definitely, that is the line.
Decapitation by car door.
Yeah, that's a line.
Yeah, we've been seeing Fisk is calm. We've been seeing him, like, very focused. Mm-hmm. And then to see the rage that is actually within him. Come out in that scene is just terrifying.
Yeah, it really was.
I think that's a really important point because as much of a huge MCU goob as I am, other than Loki, they really have not done so good on the memorable villains.
You're right.
There have been, you know, you can look at a lot of the movies and go, I see where there was a cut. I am sure there must have been more development for that character. And this was something where the villain was as much a main character as the hero was.
Yeah. Brady mentioned about Daredevil being a hero with a disability. I think it's pretty apparent from watching the show that Fisk is probably on the spectrum.
Yeah,
that seems very clear. You know,
yeah,
when you watch it.
For those of you,
is anyone who couldn't hear that?
What?
Okay.
That Wilson Fisk is pretty plainly on the autism spectrum.
She's very happy that to see a villain that's on the, they didn't come out and say it, but he's definitely on the autism spectrum.
Asperger.
Yeah.
I think my favorite scene was probably the very first time we even meet Matt Murdock, because for me it made such an impact that it was that there was never a point later that jumped out that much higher than that, just because I really had no, I didn't know that actor.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what to expect at all. I thought, yeah, you know, I've seen Ben Affleck, you know. And he was a revelation. I thought he is as charismatic, if not more, as Stephen Amell is in Arrow. I thought he's he carries the show. He's the kind of actor in the kind of role you just can't take your eyes off of him. You just keep wanting to know what he's going to do and how and what kind of little facial expressions he's going to make and all that. And he plays it so precisely to the tiniest little degree. It's just remarkable. So, from the very beginning, I was just very impressed with him.
And very good job of Blind.
Oh, yes. Yeah, which is a whole other layer. And you mentioned the opening credits. Every time I watched the opening credits, I kept, for some reason, thinking about Game of Thrones. I mean, I know they don't have that much in common, but there's something about shifting from one locale to another as we see things moving.
That's
instead
true,
of, instead of spinning around or whatever, it's melting, but it's still that same kind of dramatic, slow panning of thing, of locations.
And then the comics nerd in me is really super happy. They kept, you know, you have the iconography of Daredevil hanging onto that cross, and you just see that coming down. I'm like, oh, they kept it. That's fantastic.
That's kind of the iconic Daredevil.
The iconic image.
It is.
And how cool is that for something that is focusing on a person who's not sighted, that it is not a four-color, you know, like Game of Thrones, where there's all kinds of moving things and stuff like that. It's very, very atonal
and
very
tactile.
Subtle. And exactly, very tactile. There's like the liquid.
And there's almost like a layer of bleeding to it, too, which really fits the show.
And that adds a real creepy element to it, which is fantastic.
Speaking of bleeding, I think I'm not going to be out of place to say that I think the best fight in the series is in that second episode.
The hallway, one take. Oh, wow,
That's, I mean, you were talking about the fact of seeing a superhero that bleeds.
Yeah.
And the fact that in this fight, I mean, the fact that it opens with the seeing the guys, and he comes in, and we see him listening through the wall.
Yep.
And he kicks it in, and he goes in there, and we can't see anything, but we hear the fight. When the one guy comes running, and he gets hit in the head with the microwave. In any other action movie, that'd have been bam, down, guy pops up, keeps fighting. No, that guy's out. The whole rest of the fight, he's on the floor.
And in that case, it makes sense. But something that impressed me equally as much was the very first fight scene that they have at the shipping container.
Yes.
It's one guy versus, what, like six other guys?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a superhero movie, you know, that's not hard, right? He goes over and he punches the first guy and the guy goes down. And he punches the second guy and the guy goes down. In this one, he punches a guy and the guy punches him back. And he punches the guy and now somebody's hitting him from this side and from this side. And it was a fight that you could actually believe that there was a chance that he could lose this fight. You know, and it's like, and I don't know if I just read this into it, but for me, because there is a bone breaking sound at one point in that fight, and it is like he has gotten to the point where he's realized I can't take all of them out. I need to start breaking bones. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get a knockout shot on these people. I have to make it so they can't hit me. Mm-hmm. And boy, is that different from your typical superhero kind of thing.
Well, and also another part is that I just love. That just keeps coming back to me is where Claire fishes him out of the dumpster.
Oh yeah,
like that was the point where I knew that I would be watching the entire rest of the show and not doing anything else this weekend because I was like, oh yeah, because how awesome is it to have not just an actress of that caliber, but just a character like that going, we're fishing our superhero out of the dumpster to patch him up because he has done something stupid again.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of any other show where there's more uncertainty from the get-go that he's going to get killed.
Yeah.
I mean,
and is he 100% the good guy?
Yeah.
Very much.
But I mean, every other thing, every movie, every TV show, you pretty much are like, well, they're going to find a way to win, and they always do, pretty much.
Right.
But every time Daredevil, from the very beginning, every time he goes into a fight, you're just like, well, I guess there's more episodes of the show, but he may be dead. I don't know.
Well, I really like the way he had to grapple with where he was to try and decide whether to kill Fisk. Like, seeing him really deal with
the the
contemplating murder.
Yeah. Her question was, it was really awesome to also see a superhero actually really kind of going back and forth, having to make a choice whether or not to kill Fisk or not, which a lot of superheroes aren't going to think that far.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to be like, no, I've stopped the bad guy. Woohoo, go me. Yeah. But he's actually... But he's a lawyer, and he's actually, and not just a lawyer, he's also a Catholic lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So he's dealing really hard with that guilt and that, okay, this is a sin, but at the same point, this is getting rid of a bigger evil, mm-hmm. so where does that fall?
Yeah. For me, it's that one moment when he's talking with the priest, when the priest says, mm-hmm. another man's evil doesn't make you good.
Right.
Exactly.
And I say, that's one of the things I love about this show, is that it deals with that theme.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, superhero shows deal with what is the nature of good and evil.
Yeah.
So that, to that point, I think I've always thought about Daredevil is that, you know, the fact that he's a lawyer by day and a vigilante at night, he always struck me as the most Catholic of superheroes. That But I think I also want to mention about Claire, because I think part of the reason she's so great is that, first of all, she's an audience POV character,
mm-hmm.
and she's not brought into the story to have a sense of wonder about what's going on or mm-hmm. to idolize the hero. She says point blank to him, this is extremely shaky ethically, and even if it's not extremely shaky, you're insane to do it.
Yeah.
And she's never let up on that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is what I think she's a perfect POV character for non-comics fans.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah, that gentleman had his hand up.
It was mentioned about the Catholicism. One of the things about Daredevil being so entrenched in that neighborhood and the people who live in it in the comics
mm-hmm.
is that being Catholic like drives him
mm-hmm.
As a person in a way that you don't see with, like, you don't really have Captain America talking about going to church.
Right.
That's a good point. Yeah.
It's an interesting thing, especially if you were raised Catholic.
It's also for the audience, it's a kind of shorthand. We don't have to really, you know, think about his code. I mean, obviously, he wrestles within himself about what evil acts are acceptable and which ones aren't. But this is a character that has a clear moral code, and it isn't like, you know, Batman or Superman or anything. He has, I mean, he is admitted to the New York bar. He has certain things that he has agreed to do in terms of upholding the law and believing and choosing to practice not for a big corporation, but choosing to practice at street level because he cares about that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And because that's his people.
Unlike some other superheroes, Daredevil suffers from the "I care too much" instead of the "I don't care enough."
We have two questions, but I just wanted to make the point that Daredevil's Matt Murdock's two biggest superpowers are Catholic guilt and "I won't give up."
I can take
a beating.
And who would have thought that the two of the most successful Marvel characters translated into other media would be a lawyer and a munitions manufacturer.
Yeah.
Not the two most, you know, beloved occupations, really.
And a gun-happy raccoon.
And a gun-happy raccoon, yes.
Yes, you.
I was going to say, I love the realism of Daredevil and how it kind of brings it down to a humanistic point of view, but at the same time, going back to going to the comics and then going into the second season, I'd love to see Daredevil and another superhero co-op go on.
Next season is supposed to be Punisher. They've cast what's his
John
name?
John Bernthal.
Yeah, from The Walking Dead, the guy who was
Shane.
And just the promo pictures that we've seen so far alone look really good.
Yeah.
You, after she had her hand up, and then we'll come to you.
In the front row. One thing I really enjoy about Daredevil, and I struggle with this, like, watching the whole season, is did anyone else feel like the kind of, like, you wanted to hug Fisk sometimes, like, it's okay, baby, but then go. Sometimes, like, when Matt was messed up, especially when he had issues with Foggy, I was just like, okay, you guys were just out. Fisk, come here. You need a hug.
Did anyone else want to give Fisk a hug and tell me?
In the way that you want to hug a gorilla, but you know it can rip you in half.
So make sure there's no car doors nearby.
He is very sympathetic, and I give that to the script and to Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah. You definitely get from, like, his flashback that, like,
if he hadn't been raised by an abusive father as a poor kid,
mm-hmm.
he could have turned out to really be the savior of New York. He has yep. that drive, he has that intelligence, he has that coordination. But because he was raised by an abusive parent, that's what he keeps going back to.
And it's a great parallel to see that, too, because you've got Fisk's father that is violent, but you've also got Matt's father, who is violent in a different way, that yeah. he's a boxer. You've got the person who directs their energy in a legal way versus an illegal way,
yeah,
an immoral way versus an amoral way.
And let me just tell you, full disclosure, knowing that's what happened to Matt's dad, still walking into that was a really, really painful episode to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I sat there and went, oh, no, I remember where this is going. oh, no. No.
Don't go in the haunted house.
The flashbacks with Fisk, too, where you see him as a child,
yeah.
like, just sit down at the table all calm and he's got blood, like, splattered mm-hmm. across his face. Yeah. It's like, ugh.
So you, and then in the back.
And then in the front. So, building off some of the comments from before about the co-op with Punisher and everything,
right.
there's been a lot of speculation online about where Marvel's headed with Daredevil and then the upcoming Defenders,
mm-hmm.
and ultimately how that could tie together with the rest of the MCU.
Right.
And my question to you guys is, should they? Because Daredevil is pretty powered down versus the comics. That's a lot of things we've been talking about.
No, you're right.
And I don't know how they can integrate that
with
Black Widow taking on, you know, aliens.
Well, I think you partly nailed it with there are different power levels even within the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they've always kind of had this problem. Like, Daredevil's doing something and Spider-Man swings by, but there's a story arc.
Go
ahead. Daredevil called Born Again. Who here has read it? One of the best depictions of the Avengers in comics, and it's like three pages.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I lines that just still iconically stick in my head when I think of the Avengers. When we see Captain America in silhouette, and Matt Murdock thinks, a man with a voice that could command a god. And then there's Thor in silhouette. And does.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the comics, though, Daredevil's bouncing off walls, he's ricocheting billy clubs, taking out five guys at once, and
yep.
it's great in the show that you feel like a bunch of street thugs can take him out.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't feel that way with the rest of the MCU, so I don't know how that ever integrates.
I think with smart writing they can do it, was the panel thing.
With smart writing, they can do it. I mean, you'd need a good deft person to do that writing, and there are those people out there. None of them currently work for writing for MCU movies, but they are out there. Hopefully, you know, we'll seduce some of them over to the Marvel way of things.
You know, we've had, as this gentleman was pointing out, you know, we've had Thor and Hawkeye in how many movies together, and that's a big power differential. But I mean, it will be interesting to see what they do with Civil War, because boy, Civil War has the most people coming together that we've ever seen, and the rumor is that in Infinity War it's going to be the old Avengers, the new Avengers, the Guardians of the Galaxy, and the Defenders. All in the same movie.
Well, you can't
just really do justice to any one character at that point.
I was going to say, let's throw the two writers, especially one who's written superhero comic books, novels.
Well, I think that what I think that they're going to do is they're going to create, they've already started, a TV Netflix Marvel universe,
right.
And they'll continuously say it's in the same universe as the stuff in the movies, but I don't think they're ever really going to. Maybe at the very end, but generally they're not going to mix that much. I mean, you're going to have Daredevil multiple seasons. You're going to have Luke Cage and all these other things, and ultimately you're going to have the Defenders. But
and Shield and Agent Carter.
I think that Shield and Agent Carter are much more likely to be involved in the movies. I feel like the Netflix universe, as much as they say otherwise, and as you see, like Tony Stark's building and everything, I really feel like they're going to keep them in a separate box for the exact reasons you guys are talking about, because they. You cannot make street-level characters that weak and then bring them into a situation where Captain America, who is also a street-level character to some degree, is that strong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't... It's apples and oranges at that point.
And to a point, well, ideally, if they do mix, what I would see them do is just do, like, little touches here and there, like mentioning people here and there and different things. Like how most of Hell's Kitchen is still recovering from the Battle of New York.
Which is really
that
cool.
is the first time that anyone's ever actually acknowledged that, yeah, we blew up a lot of stuff in New York, and it's taking the city a little time to recover from it.
Don't forget Jack Ryan versus Crusher Creel.
Yeah.
They do a brilliant job of just dropping in little things.
Dropping in little things like that. So that's what I'd see them do.
You could also have Rocket Raccoon make him a cybernetic armor. And
I'm going to need that guy's eye.
Wait, what? You believe that?
See, and I thought it didn't get better than the cartoons of Rocket Raccoon stealing Pucky's arm.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy's
You've
arm.
Been very, very patient.
Yes. So this was a while back.
That's fine.
I'm going to go here. We were talking about kind of Daredevil's power, his Catholic guilt, how he's a real person, and how he really struggles with the idea of killing someone, which I kind of get, but I also, to some degree, I'm like, you beat the shit out of people every night. Like,
yeah.
I know that some of those guys that you put down stayed down.
But
Karen Page, on the other hand, we see her shoot someone, like, six times.
Karen is a fascinating character, and I love the fact that she didn't just end up, you know, because it was looking very easily like she could be the POV character, you know, the person who's like, I don't know what's going on. And, you know, and there are certainly times where she does serve that purpose, but she's got a lot more going on that we just scratched the surface of in the first
season. But she has so much agency.
Yeah, yes. She has so much agency, and we're pretty sure from the little bits of dialogue and everything, that's not actually the first time she's shot someone.
Exactly.
So I'm sitting here going, I'm like, yes, I want to know more about this. I want to know more about your backstory.
Yeah. She could have easily been reduced to just Matt's love interest.
Right. Yeah,
or
exactly.
Bobby's love interest. And she is well-rounded.
Also, also, mad props to her for taking out the evil Hufflepuff. So.
Yes. Although I will miss him dearly.
Yeah.
That was a moment that broke
great
my...
character.
Great character. Broke my heart. I mean, it fit.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But Fisk is a lot less effective without him there.
Oh, yes.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's when everything really started going off the rails.
Yeah.
Lady Murdock.
Okay, first I want to apologize to Jen.
That's okay.
Because I've known her for a long time. My almost 15-year-old son and I were watching Daredevil.
Okay.
And, he said, you know, it's really interesting, Mama, because he'll kill people. But the lady says she doesn't want to go on a date with him, and he says that's okay, and he walks away. So it really opened up a really great opportunity for us to talk about consent. Now, obviously, he's not getting consent from people that were murdering.
Do you mind if I kill you?
A 14-year-old boy clued into, no, okay, yeah, he's despicable in these other areas, but when it comes to his person-to-person relationships, the woman says no, and he says okay.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, because, and that's, you know, as we've all been saying, Fisk is such a multi-layered character where he can be so incredibly, I mean, and that's one of the great things about the way that they portrayed him. He can be so ruthless and violent and just absolutely cold and cruel, but we also see his relationship with Vanessa. And he, you know, she's like, not interested, and he's like, okay. And of course he pursues that, but I think it's great. And it's great that and 14 years old is different. The person who was telling me should my kids watch it? It was a 7-year-old, and I'm like, really no, this is not appropriate. But yeah, absolutely. And I love it anytime that I hear about people using these movies to talk about these big issues with their friends, with their families, and with their kids in this case too.
Okay. Sticking with Vanessa and Fisk for a minute, I think my favorite bit with them was the episode in Rabbit in a Snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
When at the very beginning of the episode, we see Fisk has his routine.
Yep.
He's got a dozen suits, always gets the same one. Dozens of cufflinks, always the same pair.
Mm-hmm.
And that really gave us a great insight into Fisk's mind. And then when at the end of the episode, when she's like, no, try this.
Mm-hmm. Do something different.
Yeah, for me, that illustrated that beautiful economy of storytelling.
Exactly.
Of character, of her character, his character, and their relationship.
Mm-hmm. And the way that it's shot.
That it's shot, and the fact that it always happens, because he has these flashbacks and these traumatic nightmares. And mm-hmm. So he gets up, he's like, this is how we deal, this is how we do this.
Mm-hmm. Even then, in the gallery with the paintings, where they're showing, like, all peaceful in front of the paintings, and mm-hmm. it's just a very perfect contrast.
Super, super fantastic storytelling. I saw that guy's hand first.
Going back to the power level thing, mm-hmm. I think one of the ways that they're going to be increasing Daredevil's power is they introduced Stick and Stone, as well as the entirety of the band, mm-hmm. as things that they can bring in. And you really see how Stick is still kind of on a much higher level than Daredevil currently is.
Was there better casting than
No, there was not better casting. Absolutely. No.
I can't think of anybody else who could have done
that.
That
was fantastic.
Yeah, Scott Glenn was just, oh.
Yeah, where you're just sitting there going, all right, and where's the rest of this story? Okay, you can't just leave that there. Come on.
Yeah. By the way, I killed a 7-year-old boy off screen. Does anybody care? All right, thank you. I mean, that, for me, was the shocking, like, whoa.
Kind of along, I think when we're all said and done, looking back on Daredevil, even though Doctor Strange is going to get credit for it, this show really opened up the mystical aspect.
Good point.
Madame Gao.
Oh man.
The boy in the crate, whatever he was.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. The black sky. Yeah.
The second we saw that red suit ninja, I was like, "Oh, it's on! Oh, it's on! Here's the hand. Let's go!"
Which actually, speaking of the hand and stuff, there were some issues with season one of Daredevil. And some of those kind of play into the evil Asian stereotype, which, like I said, it's not a perfect series, but it did a damn sight better than most of the MCU together.
Yeah,
sure.
So,
the thing is, you can't have Daredevil without the hand, though. They're pretty much his main. It's just at least they didn't make him the cliche yellow peril.
I was going to say, you say that, but then you can say you can't have Iron Man without the Mandarin.
Let's not get Van started.
I know.
Eyes turn green.
I don't know. I am green.
Do you like the Mandarin?
Anyway.
The Mandarin is Iron Man's arch enemy. And they utterly ruined him, and then they rehabilitated him on the Blu-ray of Thor: The Dark World, just to keep me from keeping complaining forever. So, so we'll see what they have. What the future has.
Actually, the guy with the glasses first, and then you. Okay.
Yep. I feel like the cinematic universe has been like a ton of fun, but it's lacked that like level of emotional impact.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, like, do you think that there's room for that, and can it be done in the cinematic universe?
Well, there is when you've got more than 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is that in the movies, we have a very, very short, comparatively speaking, compared to, an entire series, a short amount of time to get to know characters. And, you wouldn't be able to have as fleshed out a backstory for not only for Matt but also for Fisk and for Karen and for so many other elements in this story that you could never jam into a movie, even a Hobbit-sized movie.
How many hours of Iron Man have we gotten now, though? Mm-hmm. We've gotten over like 10 or 11 hours of Iron Man.
It can be done, but again, going back to the, you have to have a good writer.
It has to be a really good writer.
It has to be a really good writer, because the closest I've seen them actually get to that has been the two that, off the top of my head, are Iron Man 3, which, like you said, is the third Iron Man movie. So we've gone through, we've seen Tony Stark in these different stages, so we've finally gotten to this movie. And then Winter Soldier, where you just see all of Steve's feels all of the time.
That movie
Civil
is
War's
so
going to
brilliant.
Hurt.
That's my hands down favorite. Yeah.
So Winter Soldier the Russos do an excellent job with giving you just the right amount of plot and characterization. And of course, everybody who walked into that movie, and I love that movie because you can walk into it not knowing anything about that backstory and still get a good experience. Whereas you walk into it with all of the backstory and you're just sitting there sobbing in a pile of feels.
I imagine that it went something like this. Joss Whedon said to the Disney and Marvel powers that be, I don't know if I want to do the third and fourth Avengers movie. And they're like, oh. And then Captain America the Winter Soldier came out and they went,
that's all right.
That's okay. they're doing.
I think each movie has really had at least one or two really poignant scenes. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. even Guardians of the Galaxy, like...
Rocket.
Rocket. Like,
where did that come
like
from?
I was like weepy when they're all like grabbing hands around the Infinity Gym. Yeah. And it's like, wait, this is a talking raccoon. But oh my god.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
It was so awesome. I love it. I just love it so much.
Okay. Because you had your hand up for a while, I'm sorry.
Just what do you guys think moving forward, the impact of Disney disbanding the committee is going to be? Because I
as long as Kevin Feige's still in charge, I'm.
But he's out.
No.
It's not that he's. It's not that he's out. As I understand it, basically they've said the MCU is going to be under Disney's direct control, whereas the TV stuff is still going to be under Ike Perlmutter, right? Which. You know, and there's a lot of good that can come of that. I think that there's, you know, potentially some of the maybe not so great choices that have been made in terms of on the creative side. It sounds like Kevin Feige will have more freedom to go in the directions that he wants. That I think will be great. On the other hand, it does concern me that it means they have two different reporting structures now, and like we were talking about how can. It's good because that goes very much to the earlier question about how can you have the TV characters and the movie characters in the same universe. Well, that's been an issue for a while. I mean, Joss Whedon has said, which is weird because he's the executive producer, but Joss Whedon has said that Coulson is dead for good in the cinematic universe, but he's alive in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Even though he wrote it.
Even though he wrote it.
Yeah. Although, you know, so yes.
Not paying attention to that.
Yeah, I'm ignoring that. For me, that's
For me, that's
Joss's headcanon, and he's welcome to it.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, like, do any of you guys feel worried? Because I don't trust, like, you named the two people in charge, Disney and Perlmutter, and I don't trust either of them to move forward with either thing
well,
they're responsible for.
Oh, honestly.
Perlmutter, with his attitude towards strong female characters, could throw all of these Netflix shows under the bus. It's just terrible for women.
You're right. Supposedly.
And Disney, I don't have any faith that they're going to continue that strong, cohesive story arc that's been moving forward, because that's not Disney.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know.
Part of it is yes, we are concerned. That's the short answer. The longer answer is we're just kind of going to have to wait and see and do what comic book fans do best and really, really hope for the best. Really, really hope for the best.
You've been very patient. Thank you.
I have to respectfully disagree with the classification of Daredevil as a weak superhero.
I wouldn't say weak. I would say street level.
If Daredevil is a weak street level superhero, then so is Batman.
No discussion, absolutely.
And I don't think, I think there are very
and
few
Iron
people.
Iron Man could hose Batman.
But without his suit, not a chance
right,
in hell.
Right.
You know? but
Batman would be ready. He's always ready.
but see, and
my superhero can beat up your superhero.
You get into to different concepts. You get into different concepts of superpowers, and you know. It's like Superman can fly and is really strong. Well, what does Batman have? And what my little group has always come to the conclusion of is that he has the same thing that Daredevil has.
He's a detective.
And that is supernatural will.
Mm-hmm.
He has a level of will and a level of drive that is above and beyond anyone within
he's blind broke Batman.
Of him.
Well, let's be clear. I was talking about the Daredevil as we saw him in this season, the TV show,
right?
Which is like Batman right after he, you know, is
just
learning martial arts and stuff.
Exactly. And I would hope that Marvel, as far as this TV series, would take the opportunity to develop Daredevil into the crazy bouncing off of walls on par with Stick character that he can and deserves to be.
Mm-hmm.
you know, in season 7 or something.
If he's going to hang with Luke Cage,
he's
better.
He's going to mean so much more, though, having seen him come up from the level
exactly.
that he's at
and
now,
I like
as opposed to just Superman out of the box.
Right. Yeah.
And the main determining factor in who's going to beat who in a fight is the writer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who does the writer want to win?
It's absolutely. I think it's the name at the beginning of the,
that's
episode.
True.
You know, ultimately,
Captain America,
top billing.
Civil War.
Although Daredevil will get his behind kicked in his own comic and does frequently.
Yes. Back a few minutes ago, you were saying that scene where Fisk is prompted by Vanessa to change his routine.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And she points to the lighter gray suit, and I thought maybe that was a direction towards the white, all-white suit that we might get one day, but then he went into prison. I think that Fisk should come back as Kingpin and be fully realized.
Yeah. She raises a good point that this is very much an origin story of Kingpin, because he's not really Kingpin until that final episode.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Same way, you know, Matt's not really Daredevil until that last episode.
Yeah, season 2 is going to be so much.
Will we have Kingpin at all in season 2? Do we know that, or is it just going to be the Punisher?
I think Vincent D'Onofrio has been signed for it, but
okay.
I think he's going to be much more a background kind of character.
I want him to hire Matt Murdock to get him off these charges. All right, you had your hand up first.
Yeah.
I think
I was just going to say that I think on a small level they have. Already been working at developing Daredevil as a superhero, because in the pilot episode, all it did was box.
Mm-hmm.
You only punched. And then, you know, since then, they've been adding more and more skills.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's been a great way of teasing the reader or the watcher so they keep watching, so it's just like your little hook at the end, so you're like, okay, I want to see where this goes. I'm still going to see where this goes. Yes, Netflix, I am still watching this TV show. Play the next episode.
Yeah. But it's
since I started this.
Okay, yeah, so who here binge-watched, like, the whole thing all at once? Anybody?
Not the whole thing.
The whole series. All at once.
I
spaced it out over about 5 days. I had one or two episodes in a day.
Yeah.
My friends came over, so I had to watch it more than once, because I watched one day, and then I had to go back and continue watching it.
Good thing it was good then, isn't it? You didn't binge, right? But you did.
I did.
Okay. Pretty much. But if the second season has him in the red costume the whole time and bouncing the billy clubs off and everything, it's not really going to be the same show that the first season was, and I wonder if the audience is still going to be there, or if it's be a different audience, or a bigger audience, or a smaller. What will the impact be if he changes that much?
Well, I mean, I think that's a very good question, and although sadly the panel on this is happening at the same time as ours, it also makes me think of what's Agent Carter going to be like in the second season when all of a sudden they're in Hollywood and we don't have Howard, and it's. I mean, they're going in very different directions. So, but I have faith in Marvel.
Yeah, they did strike very quickly to go to season 2, because the original plan was we weren't going to get Daredevil like season 2 until after the Defenders.
After all the other
Defenders. Right.
And then the Daredevil came out, and everybody went, this, give me this.
That's exactly what happened with Iron Man.
Yep.
We got Iron Man 2 before we got any other Marvel movies, I guess, after the Hulk. When did the Hulk was after?
Well, that was in development at the same time.
Right, right.
So.
But so was Ant-Man.
You had a question back there.
So, talking a bit about, like, the kind of the show as a medium, Matt Murdock is blind, but I'm not. I kind of wish they had used more lighting in the show.
We see, that's like how you know it's a dark show.
But it doesn't need to be literally dark.
you had your point.
It's a thematic choice. You know, it's you know, not literally every single scene is. I mean, obviously the things, a lot of the stuff with Fisk was incredibly brightly lit.
I had a hard time watching it on my iPad at Subway at lunch. I couldn't tell what was. I had to go to the restroom and turn a light off or something to see what was going on. You're right.
TV, like that does True Black, because it was actually like, so if you watch it on a screen that reproduces black, like the dark areas don't glow into the light, so you get really like sharp.
I noticed that too. Yeah.
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 But yeah,
so I'm
really
too poor to enjoy Daredevil.
You're like Matt Murdock. You can't see it.
That's right, yeah.
Now, the lighting does contrast really well with the rest of the MCU, like a lot of Captain America.
Oh, yeah.
Those are really brightly lit.
seen from a mile away. But Daredevil wasn't like that. Like it, it made it like a very personal show because you had to like really focus.
You had to be paying attention.
And that ties into a point I wanted to make, which I love the fact that they didn't overplay Matt Vision.
Yeah, you know, he got one scene.
Pretty much. And it was beautifully done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's great that they showed the assistive technology that, that he uses, too. Like, you know, the fact that when his phone rings, his phone doesn't just ring. It says Foggy, or Karen, you know, and the alarm clock and things like that.
His keyboard.
Exactly. You weren't going to forget the fact that this was a guy who was blind. It's very well done.
Yeah.
So Lady Murdoch.
Did anybody else watch it with the narration for vision impaired?
Yes.
Oh, because it's amazing.
Yeah,
really?
It's fantastic.
It's amazing. Because I went through and I watched the series, watched it again with my husband, and then I watched it again with the narration, and it is so, so good.
That's fantastic.
And like, I would sometimes put up another window or do something else.
Just listen
to the story.
Wow.
And it's wonderful. So if you haven't done that, I strongly
Yeah, my second time watching it in preparation for this panel was me at work with it in my headphones, just listening to the narration, and it is so amazingly good.
Yeah. And like, major kudos to Netflix for stepping up on that.
Yes, exactly.
When the complaint started, because at first people were like, what about blind people to watch this? And immediately, we're on the ball.
Yeah, and they've started rolling that out for some of their other stuff, which is really fantastic.
Make a note of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about if season two is going to be like the same show as season one a few minutes ago. I would be optimistic because of Netflix. Because you've seen Netflix recently let their contract lapse with Epics. They're all about the prestige drama.
Huh.
That's all they care about. Because there will not be Transformers on there anymore. And several other movies that you don't give a shit about. It's going
to
be like, you know, that's what they care about. It's like Game of Thrones, not Game of Thrones, sorry, House of Cards, this show. So I'd be optimistic that it remains kind of...
Netflix so far has not yet disappointed me. I cannot say that for everything else. Netflix so far has not yet disappointed me with that, and when a complaint has been raised, they've been Johnny on the spot to fix it if there was a problem needing fixing. So I'm cautiously optimistic, and it remains my current MCU happy place. So,
talking about just the fact that you could argue that this is possibly the best Marvel product that they've put out so far, and to go back to whether or not, you know, Daredevil is minor leagues or major leagues, it's worth noting here that this is such a good show and so captivating that in reality, it was just a story about a guy fighting someone who's trying to pull a real estate scam. And yet, we all watch it. So I don't think it matters whether he's up there with Iron Man, because Iron Man's
it's
not going to stop.
It's good storytelling.
It's not, he's not even on his radar.
Yeah, good storytelling and fantastic characters. Owsley.
Right.
Yeah.
Wesley, everybody around Fist, really. And Madame Gal, when she comes back for Iron Fist, just the fact that, what languages do you speak? All of them.
Much further.
Yeah,
Much further away.
Yeah, and then in the first episode when we see the packet and it's got the symbol on it, I was like, Iron Fist is coming and he's going to kick her ass! Sorry, any kids in here? Okay. Last question, sadly due to time.
That's what really impressed me, especially early on, is I think that initially, in the movie universe, like someone like Wesley wouldn't become the character that they become. And you see that meeting of, it's like the Legion of like easily defined
evil Legion
stereotypes.
Of evil. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And around episode 4, 5, 6, the Russians start to really come into their own. Like when episode 4, I think, begins with a flashback that's the Russians' flashback.
Yes.
Something you could never really do in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
They're secondary, tertiary villains, and they're not superhero villains, and they're also despicable people. Yeah. But one thing that the series really invests in is the tragedy of kind of those brothers, even though we never are allowed to forget that they're sex and drug traffickers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We get invested in them,
we really
even
do.
As bad guys.
And that brings me to my other favorite part about Daredevil is... Go through the series and count all the different languages they use, and the times where you get subtitles and the times you don't.
You don't.
Yeah.
Because that, and having grown up in different places around both North and South America, that's really super awesome. Just to add that extra texture of reality to it. It's the, yeah, they're speaking Chinese, you're not going to know what they're talking about. Not all the time. Yeah. Yeah, they're speaking Russian over there. You maybe have a guess of what they're talking about, but you know it's probably not nice because you've seen that dude before. Yeah. So that's something that I just really super, I was like, yes, thank you.
Yeah, the scene of Matt and the Russian brother in the subway. Right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that was so
good. Oh, man.
Yeah. It's so, I mean, it's really, like you said, it's hard to pick favorite moments out of the show because there's so many all over the place.
Yeah.
But to kind of wrap this up, since we have to, they'll throw us out of the room in a few minutes. Definitely looking forward to season two.
Oh, yeah. I'm just waiting for Defenders. I want us all to just keep building and getting bigger and better.
Looking forward to Jessica Jones.
Yes. I love the Punisher, so I'll be interested to see what they do with
him. David Tennant is a bad guy. I'm looking forward to watching people's heads.
What's that?
Date?
I don't
think
soon.
Soon.
Soon,
trademark. It's finished filming, and before the end of the year.
Yeah, that's all we've got is before the end of the year.
Not
much of the year left.
There were so many things with that where I was like, well, they're not really going to go there with the Purple Man, right?
Yeah.
If you're familiar with the storyline, it was like, they're not going to
do that. Red Alias?
Yeah. And then after seeing the car in the head in the car door, it's like, no, they're probably going to go with Purple Man. Because it's Netflix.
Yeah.
So, Van, where may people find you and... if they wanted to hear more from you.
www.plexico.net and The White Rocket Show. You can look on iTunes for White Rocket Podcast or go to the Earth Station One Network. That's where we are.
You, sir.
You can find me at daysgonebad.com and or just Google me and my books will show up. First one's free.
You can find me... I have cards with my website address on them and my email. Smart. So... but I'm also at BookNerdGuru on Twitter. Will also find me. So, yes, if you want a card, please come take a card.
Cool. I am, like I said, I'm the producer of Earth Station MCU. I'm also on Earth Station Who, if there are any Doctor Who fans in here. And, of course, we've got Facebook groups and websites and everything dedicated to both of those. And y'all should come see the Buffy Horror Picture Show tomorrow night because I'm playing Terra Magenta.
Yes. And I am Gary Mitchell, Gary_Mitchell with one L on the Twitter. I am co-director of American Sci-Fi Classics. Join our Facebook group. Join the American Sci-Fi Media track on Facebook. And
I tried.
And you can find me wherever fine podcast products are sold. Ladies and gentlemen, Daredevil.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.